It's Wednesday, February 20th, 2008, and you're listening to episode 91 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 50 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is John.
My name is Matt.
Howdy. And that would be Chad. Now, John, we are sitting here drinking these gigantic blue cans of something.
We are drinking pints of this substance called Labatt Blue, which is ostensibly beer.
And I just tasted that, and it's not good.
It
kind of has this tingling,
I talked about Captain
taste.
Crunch, Chris Engler, or with him, about beer the other day, and he was just like, hey, check out this Canadian stuff. And we go to BJ's Liquo, and, you know,
Liquo.
They don't really have Canadian microbrews. They don't even have American microbrews. They just have a bunch of crap, and it's kind of cheap. So we got Labatt Blue in the spirit of the Canadian occasion.
Obsess me more than anything else. They don't have a single cider. The entire place is a full-blown Liquo store.
To explain Liquo store, it's L-I-Q-U-O. There's no burnt out R. There's just no R.
There is no R,
They ran out of room on the sign, and that was it.
No, that's just it.
No one thought that through.
There is room on the sign. It's just not there.
there's BJ's Liquo store. Like Chad said, there's room for an R. There just is no R, and we don't know why.
We think the budget ran out.
Oh, Dan, tell them about the bong that they were selling for $125.
Oh, yeah, there's this tequila bottle they were selling that... All right, it's a bottle of tequila, except it has two, like...
chambers that make up the bottle.
Yeah, like you know, with most bottles, okay, you picture, like, you have an open bottle, and then you have, like, a spout or whatever on top, or an opening on top that you pour out of. Except on this one, it had two of those spouts, one on top and one kind of up on a corner.
Inflow and outflow.
And the one on top goes through all these kind of different spherical chambers before it hits the bottom, where it connects to the one on the side. I mean, it is a bong.
Remember, Dan, it's water tobacco pipe. If you can't say it, they can't sell it.
Yeah. But yeah, it's
cultural.
This bottle is a bong, except it's filled with tequila.
I asked the woman behind the counter, I'm like, you're selling a $125 bong? And she's like, there's tequila in it.
I like that lady. I bet she was dynamite cool 30 years ago. No, seriously.
All righty.
Going for a little cougar action there, John?
I always do.
John's always got that cougar
I don't go
action.
For the cougar action. The cougar action comes from me.
True.
Yeah, and we're glad to have John back. The cast is a little strange this week. That's mostly because this week, we normally record on Thursdays, and Thursday this week is Valentine's Day, which completely doofed up our scheduling.
No. Valentine's Day didn't doof up your schedule. The women doofed up your schedule.
All right, the women who make demands of Valentine's Day that Luke and Tex are too afraid to oppose doofed up the scheduling.
So what are your Valentine's Day plans?
I will give Chris Hussey, who's actually our new permanent host, despite the fact he has yet to appear on the show within the past, like, 6 months or to a year, I will give him a pass because he's still waiting on equipment to arrive via the mail. Anyway, because of that, we've got kind of a strange cast because we're actually recording on a Wednesday instead of our normal Thursday.
Thursdays this semester, I have the films of Alfred Hitchcock, my honors senior seminar capstone course. So
have you watched the 39 Steps yet?
We have.
That's an excellent movie.
I actually read the book last weekend and wrote a comparative lit film.
Have you watched any of his TV show?
Yeah.
He had an outstanding TV
It didn't last
show.
For very long.
No, but, it didn't, but it's freaking outstanding.
It is good. Yeah, we only watched one episode.
It was absolutely... I love Alfred Hitchcock. His writing style, his... You know what's funny is I've never seen an Alfred Hitchcock movie, but I've seen several episodes of his lesser-known TV show.
You've never seen any of the movies?
No, seriously.
You've never seen... Watch Rear Window first. I'm sure everybody's like, oh, watch this first. Rear Window, it combines a lot of the comedy elements and the serious elements and stuff and the sort of mental, you know, thing that he does where he plays with it.
I don't know.
I don't think it's necessarily his best movie, but I think that it's very Hitchcock.
After watching Disturbia, I found Rear Window very derivative.
Well, so this is like Warhammer Online is just going to be a copy off of WoW kind of thing, you're telling me?
That's what I loved about his TV show is the fact that this entire TV show was so creative. It was so non-formulaic that where, I mean, I was watching his TV show, and a lot of times on the episodes, I could not predict the end.
Oh, dude, he didn't even like TV. Yeah. The only reason he was doing that TV show is to show them all he could just do it better, even though he didn't want to.
And actually, Dan, if you were to go and get, like, the Alfred Hitchcock box set and blow through it all tonight, you would not be impressed, not because it's bad, but because you've seen it all before. All the modern movies you're watching now
are ripped off.
Off of Hitchcock. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Some goes to as far as to just, you know, reference it directly, like the if you ever seen the movie Four Rooms, the last segment that Tarantino directed, just straight up ripped off right from the right from the series, and
that was the one with the cigarette lighter, right?
Yeah.
Did you know that I watched in the 80s? They had that 80s version of Twilight Zone, and Twilight Zone did that exact skit. And I had always thought that Tarantino ripped off that old Twilight Zone, and I was the only one who's ever seen it. But, of course, Twilight Zone had ripped off Alfred Hitchcock.
Nothing new under the sun.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, good old Ecclesiastes.
Precisely.
There's nothing new under the sun, which is funny because that was written, you know, somewhere in the, like, 1000 BC or whatever, and yet it's still true today.
I probably ripped it off of somebody.
Yeah. That goes back to that whole monomyth thing.
How many thousands of years of Judaic tradition was there by the time they wrote Ecclesiastes?
Right, exactly. Anyway, Fear the Con coming up on March 8th. If you have not signed up, once again, we will not stop hammering this until after the con is over.
In fact, we might just hammer it one day after the con, just for old times.
With Valentine's Day coming up, we're hammering everything. So.
It's going to be a wild time. My mom is coming to the Worldwide Wing Night before that. You know it's going to be a party.
Oh, all right. Oh, yeah. Wow. Worldwide Wing Night.
Ms. Grana's awesome.
She's pretty crazy.
She makes great lasagna, by the way.
She does make great lasagna.
For gaming sessions, nonetheless.
Yes.
Right.
Nice.
But Worldwide Wing Night on Friday, the con on Saturday, and optometry checks at Meyer Eye Care on Sunday.
Luke is such a shill.
Which is,
hey, like, he's doing a service, providing it for the community.
Right.
Yeah, if you can't see.
You could see what I've seen with your eyes.
Phil can cheat more easily on his dice.
Dawn and I went to Meyer Eye Care. Actually, I'm wearing Meyer Eye Care glasses right now. We went to Luke's shop, and he opened up just for us. He was closed that day.
Right.
And he opened up just for Dawn and I.
You know,
I,
he tells everyone just, that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So, anyway, he opened up just for us, and he forgot to perform this test on Dawn that he did on me. And so he's like, oh, but there's this, that, you know, you use the equipment. That's a modern way of doing it. But there's this new way of doing it, too. Turns around, grabs her head. This is while we're walking out.
Tears it off.
Just about. Takes his thumbs and presses both thumbs right into her eyes.
Oh my gosh.
Dude, I've seen Blade Runner 2. That doesn't end well.
And he's like, okay, you're fine. And she's like, oh, cool.
Well, it's nothing the god of optometry won't let him into heaven for.
That's right.
What the hell is the point of that test?
I don't know. You're going to have to ask. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
He has very carefully calibrated thumbs.
He does. He does. He's a trained thumb professional.
I'm starting to think Luke's a quack here, man. If his like eye test consists of so many thumbs in your eyes.
He made my eyes glow.
That's cool. Shoving your thumbs in someone's eyes, not so cool.
I do want to get those glowy eye contacts from you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to DM my game in Fear the Con with like green iridescent pupilless orbs.
Well, I told him I want a cosmetic contact, like reptile eyes. For no particular
reason.
That'd be cool
too.
You know, the thing is that, you know, they're up and down, and the contacts would shift in your eyes, so, you know, they'd be, like, all skewy.
Well, that's cool, too.
They have weighted contacts where they...
Do they really?
They keep the right orientation.
Huh.
There's inevitably two or three cat girls at Archon, and one of them always has the contacts, and it kind of looks weird. Go to Archon sometime. Your mmming might stop.
By cat girls, he means fat girls.
That's why I go to Dragon Con, where, I love the South.
There were a few cuties at Gen Con. I scared a Samus. Oh, well.
How did you scare her? I must have missed this.
You touch her gun.
I didn't touch her. I just looked at her and kind of hooted a little bit, and she ran away. Oh, well. Time bomb. Get out fast. She knows the drill.
She's too young. Wait until she's 40. And then you won't
well,
be
well, yeah, then she'll
her.
Be in my so six saying, hex prime so range.
You saying you tackled her and did a chubby right on her
no,
facial visor there?
I merely expressed gentlemanly interest.
Oh, I know your gentlemanly
which
interest,
she responded
sir.
To with holding down L and R and running away. Whatever. She had the dash boots, I tell you what. She had the full power suit.
She dropped down, turned into a ball, and rolled up a wall.
No screw attack for me that night.
It appeared you were out of missiles.
Indeed.
Anyway, Fear of the Con coming up on March 8th with the Worldwide Wing Night the Friday before and the Meyer Accurate thing the Sunday after. I really do hope you guys will join us. There's a great sign-up going on right now. And if the...
Luke really going to do eye exams?
Yeah, he's seriously...
Oh, really?
Last episode, I made myself the first sign-up. I will be there to get my eyes examined.
Dawn and I would totally be there, except we
just did it.
Just so, did, yeah.
Well, my post-apocalyptic supply of contacts that I stashed up from the optometrist I hated is about to run dry. So I'm going to be there at Meyer Eye Care the Sunday after. I have made myself the first guinea pig to go through his horrific 18th century, you know,
thumb eye
drill in the head
Dude,
process.
Make him make your eyes glow. It's awesome.
All right, so there we go. If you want to see Dan's eyes glow, we will demand that the Sunday following Fear the Con. Also, Tony is promoting, good old Tony Mass, the pimp of the internet with his 18 podcasts. He is doing Fear the Fruit, in which he is taking donations. And during the con, we are going to be selling concessions like hot dogs and stuff. But Tony is going to be handing out completely free fruit. Basically, yep. To promote gamer health. And if you want to donate to that effort, and he's doing it through his Tony's Losing It podcast, which is a weight loss sort of support podcast. Mm-hmm. If you want to get involved in that, check the show notes. We will have a link to where you can go. I've already donated 20. I think, Chad, you've donated 5 or 10. Yep. Several of the hosts have donated to this. If you want to get involved with Fear the Fruit, definitely check this out. This is great stuff. Even though I'm 160 pounds, I fully support what he is doing because...
Are you 160?
Yeah.
I thought you would have been less.
No, actually, I used to weigh... I got close to 185.
Because I weighed 160 in high school.
I am
and 6... That's why I was all lifting
weights. I weigh 160 right now, and I am 5'9", to you,
well,
what, 6'3"?
I was 6 foot... I'm 6'2". I used to weigh about 185 and lost about 25 pounds because of social stress and a medication I was on. Mm. So it's not for any good reason.
I just did push-ups and sit-ups and
listen,
didn't
these
eat all
guys,
the damn
time. You and me are like, you know, 105, right? You know, yeah.
When I was 14, I weighed 230 and could bench 300.
Nice.
So anyway, I don't remember where I was going with that. But the point being...
Point is, healthy gaming eating
habits. Well, all right, the point being that even though I'm not worried about my weight, I still am worried about eventually dying of heart disease. So if you guys are interested in promoting any kind of physical health, then definitely check this out. And even if you're not, still do check out Fear the Con and be there on March 8th.
And there is going to be normal food there as well, not
yes,
just fruit.
There will be concessions there. Your ticket price will include all the beer and all the soda you can handle. There will be Epoch of Rysos games, Danvers games. There will be Skies of Glass games. We've got tons of people signed up.
There will
up
be Warcraft versus The Sims.
So
I'll be running it.
Is that in the... What time slot's that in?
Second.
Oh, really? That's the one time slot I'm not running a game.
Come on down.
I have an Epoch game that I'm running on first and third slot, so I may have to check that out.
Luke wanted to run me third slot, and I was like, to be partying third slot. Why don't you put me second slot?
Yeah,
like,
two right. slots I gotta sign up.
Well,
for
and either before the first or after the third. I'm thinking after the third, there's going to be the throwdown between you and Tony
on
Watchmen.
You know, if he's brave enough to actually show up, you know, we'll see.
If I had more time, I would throw together a Rorschach. But I do not.
Tony's going to be busy hiding behind all his apples and bananas, but I think he's going to be there. So
mm-hmm. At that point, Tony will be hiding behind a bottle of single malt Lowland Scotch whiskey.
See, but, that's my ultimate strategy, is to get him all nice and liquored up.
You won't have
debate.
To do anything.
Yeah.
Leave that to me.
Sort of a self-fulfilling...
So, yeah. Tony, I feel this and this about Alan Moore, and this is my logical debate. It's
like, Cthulhu in New York, and then Soviets.
I'm like, Tony, you got me there. What can I say? Sir, you are the winner.
Alrighty. The Hobbit. Lately,
short man, hairy feet.
I have been reading.
Class balance. 13 dwarf fighters and a halfling thief.
Very poor balance.
Yes.
Lately,
where's the healing?
That's true. There's no healer. Even when they have Gandalf in the party, there is no healer.
None.
The hands of the king are the hands of the healer, and the king isn't coming around for four more books.
And I am the king, and
no,
my hands will heal.
Aragorn is the king.
All right. But the
son of Arathorn.
I have been reading The Hobbit. I have been woefully behind on my nerd gamer required reading. And as I prep,
it's okay. I've never read Lord of the Rings.
Well, as I prep to read Lord of the Rings, and I will refer to it as one book because it's written as one book, not three. It's been broken into a trilogy in more recent
only
times.
For publishing purposes.
But it was written as one book. As I prep to read Lord of the Rings, I decided that I'm going to go ahead.
That's my favorite story ever, by the way.
Really?
Yes.
I decided that I'm going to go ahead. My favorite story is Main Event by Jim Long. I actually met Jim Long. It's a great BattleTech book, but. Anyway,
my favorite story or book is Moon is a Harsh Mistress.
Actually,
I'm doing a paper on Heinlein.
That's my favorite nerd book. My favorite book, actually.
Have you read Moon is a Harsh Mistress?
No, I've not.
Oh, it's fantastic.
But my favorite book overall is actually To Kill a Mockingbird for the single reason that I did not have it stuffed down my throat in school. I read it on my own as an adult.
Because we
I
went to a really... just insert whatever vitriol, non-politically correct term you want to hear. We went to that high school.
Right.
Yeah, what did we read? We read Watership Down, which is actually a good book.
Yeah, it is. And
Cheaper by the Dozen.
And we read a bunch of Shakespeare's plays.
Yeah. But no, we read excerpts of Shakespeare's plays.
No, I read some whole plays. And then Flowers for Algernon that I read.
Everybody reads that.
I went through the highest level English course that our high school provided, our college composition, and they never had me read out Flowers for Algernon. I did not read that until years later. I was 28 years old, and you recommended it to me, and I read it, and it's wonderful.
You know, that's what's one thing, really sad things about novels in general, is that there are some classic books out there that, and I don't think that everything that's a classic is good. I'm not a believer classic equals good. In fact, I am one of like three people in the world that will tell you I think Shakespeare is a bad writer.
You suck.
But that aside,
you are in the minority.
That aside,
man, people get on me for Alan Moore.
So. I know. That aside, the point is that there are
calling Shakespeare a bad writer is intellectual suicide.
There are
continue, Dan.
There are a lot of good books out there.
Being on Fear the Boot is intellectual
no,
suicide.
No, it's not. Fear the Boot is half of my personal statement to law school.
But there are a lot of great books out there that school sours people on because they shove them down your throat. And I think To Kill a Mockingbird is one of them. I read it as an adult, never read it in school, absolutely adored it. I think it's the single best book I've ever read. But getting back to my point, I'm just now reading The Hobbit as I prepare to read The Lord of the Rings.
Tangent back to your original
That's
off tangent.
Right.
Guess what? I thought the opposite about Catcher in the Rye. I wished
we were talking about To Kill a Mockingbird.
I know, but I
okay.
He's saying is that he's saying that you know classics were shoved on you as a kid, and it made people hate them. I wish someone had shoved Catcher in the Rye on me
to make you a better serial killer.
When I was a teenager, because I mean that's what it's about. It's about a young boy not becoming a man, but becoming a teenager and all the questions and the awkwardness and all this sort of weirdness that you go through, it doesn't necessarily answer, but I mean, it just talks about it and gets it out there in a really good story. And I'm reading this when I'm a 30-year-old man. I'm like, wow, I could have actually used this when I was 13, 14 years old. But since my high school and junior high was so... we can't do anything at all that's even remotely controversial, so we'll have them read about bunny rabbits. You know, I never got that opportunity.
I stole Phil's copy and read it. It's still in my basement.
I still haven't read it. I intend to read it. But
I read it when I was about 16. Mm-hmm. That is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
It was shocking, though, because it had the F word in it.
It did have
the
F
word. It was in the school library.
And it had a hooker.
Ooh. I find it more interesting having read books in high school that had the N word in it, because that was kind of unexpected.
What, like
what'd you read,
Tom Sawyer?
Mark Twain?
Yeah, exactly.
Rodney Howard?
Mark Twain. But right now,
Lovecraft?
Right now, I'm trying to hold off because I'm reading The Hobbit, as I said, and I'll get back to that here in a second. But I'm holding off because the next stack of books that I have to read after that is a bunch of William Faulkner books that my brother-in-law, Adam, got me. And I'm kind of trying to hold off on those because right now I'm kind of at a depressed point in my life, and reading Faulkner while you're depressed is kind of like taking the Kool-Aid while you're with Jim Jones. So I'm
hey, Jim Jones made some damn good Kool-Aid.
Faulkner isn't all depressing. I mean,
As I Lay Dying.
I think it's the just man as wrote I lay
a
dying.
Lot of novels. They're not all happy and, you know, kicking up your heels and enjoy, but they're not all depressing necessarily either.
I'm sure he slipped up and wrote one happy book, but
there might need a light popcorn munching pick-me-up book. I read The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich.
Chad will...
I just skipped to the end, though.
Yeah. We're like, we got you, you mothers! Yep.
Chad will be happy to know that my next set of books after The Hobbit is going to be the entire Journey to the West series.
Oh!
That whole
wonderful
box set of books is sitting there ready
to go. Tell me when you start reading. I might just pick it up and reread it.
But getting back to The Hobbit, I have a somewhat controversial opinion of The Hobbit, which is that as I'm preparing to read Lord of the Rings...
Your opinion...
What, you're going to one-up Shakespeare sucks with your Hobbit dissertation?
He's going to take the Chad tack on it. He's like,
right.
Tolkien is a hack!
I wouldn't say Tolkien is a hack, but what I will say is The Hobbit is not half as interesting as I thought.
My biggest complaint...
I loved The Hobbit, and I completely agree.
My biggest complaint against The Hobbit, and I know a lot of people complain about Lord of the Rings, which I haven't gotten to yet, so I have no educated comment on, but my biggest complaint with The Hobbit is not the pacing of the writing, but it's the fact that each chapter is so episodic.
No, nothing happens.
I feel like...
They walk.
Well...
And they sing... And they walk.
Yeah.
And then they walk some more. And oh, there's a stag. Get him. Oh, let's
yeah,
walk.
Yeah, yeah. I saw and Clerks 2 as well, Chad.
There's a lot.
I haven't seen Clerks 2.
Really?
Yeah.
There's this whole skit about Lord of the Rings, how it's just about them walking.
Well,
really?
Well, they're right.
You just said it.
I will have to agree with Chad, but my bigger complaint is that I really feel like there's no specific narrative to the book.
Right.
Now, I realize that, okay, yes, there's a general plot line, or they're trying to get to the Lonely Mountain to reclaim the gold. But that plot line really has no bearing on the vast majority of chapters. I'm about halfway through the book, and so far every chapter has been the standalone episode that has nothing to do with the main narrative.
Wait until you see the conclusion. You'll love it.
And
they don't even do it. That some human kills the dragon and they just show up. Dude, you're not going to punch me for spoiling The Hobbit. It is 2008. You have played so much D&D. Hey guys, Eris dies. Soylent Green is people.
No!
Yeah. You can't bring her back with a Phoenix down.
She's a man! She's a man!
No, she's not.
She's a man!
Dan, it seems to me like you're almost saying, like, as if it's written in small, discrete chunks, like something you could read to your children at night.
Because it is a children's book.
With The Hobbit, though, it's these point, like we're saying, these episodes, these individual things happen. Now, a lot of those individual things are just them walking, singing, that's about it. But there's a couple of things that happen throughout the book that make the book, at least for me, that are just really, really cool and define the book. And that isn't walking down a road.
Well, there's only a couple events at all that are relevant to anything beyond the story in the wider Tolkienosphere.
You know, when they get attacked by the trolls or whatever they are, and the sun comes up in that
the
whole
Cockney
thing.
Cockney speaking trolls.
Yes, yes.
All right, we were talking before the show started about the arcade games and the evolution of arcade games. And actually, I guess where we started was with the old sit-down X-Wing game.
That was not X-Wing, brother. That was Star Wars.
Well, Star Wars. Yeah. Sorry, you were piloting an X-Wing. Yes.
Vector graphics and all. I love that
you're
game.
You're fighting vector graphics, defending yourself against incoming asterisks.
We were trying to not figure out, but we were like, because I said, you notice how you could pilot that ship, but then you really couldn't?
You could kind of dodge things, but you really couldn't, per se, change course. You just kind of dodge things.
I wonder what it'd
be like
to play that now. Would I get the feeling that I'm on a roller coaster ride and able to shoot things?
Well, I remember even like around that same time, the old Star Trek game. I wonder how many people even remember that.
Where
the arcade or PC?
Yeah, there was an old Star Trek arcade game where it was like a lot of the versions were sit down, but there's a stand up version as well, where you saw an overhead view of the Enterprise. It was just like a circle and then two lines where the warp nacelle would be. And you would encounter like Klingon warships.
Is that the one where you press the warp button and it all stretched out and then the thing shot
off? And you just kind of shoot away. You had photon torpedoes. And every so often on like bonus levels, you'd run into Nomad and you had to fight Nomad. And,
yeah,
exactly. And we were talking about our.
Do you remember that, John?
Yeah, I was like, negative five. Yeah,
John, you were like not born when this game came out.
I remember the Journey arcade machine. That was fun.
The band?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I remember the Aerosmith one.
I remember the Aerosmith one, but it sucked.
Chad and I, you and I used to, man, we'd go through tons of quarters playing what we called Aerosmith guns. Yeah. And I think it was actually called, like, was it Generation X or something like that.
Generation crap.
And we just called it Aerosmith guns. Where you
that
got
game
to
was totally
you got to shoot flaming CDs at people.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we started talking about arcade games. And we talked about how arcade games, in terms of the gameplay, the graphics, the interactivity, have evolved over time. That if you compare the original Star Wars arcade game, where you're basically on this railroad fighting vector graphics and Asterisks, and you compare that to the most recent Star Wars arcade game, where you have lightsaber fights and all kinds of different stuff with this movie quality graphics.
Actually, the most recent Star Wars arcade game might be about 10 years old.
What, the Pod Racer game?
Oh.
No,
the one with the
sit-down Star Wars trilogy one was very cool, but now it's old as hell.
Is it really?
It came out in, the 96 re-releases.
There's a Pod Racer game, too. And then I seem to remember, like, with the Pod Racer game, like, shoved to the back of it was a game that you had a joystick, and it was just like an old style joystick with one button right on top.
Yeah, it's a nice gesture, Chad.
And it was, you like that?
Like an old we don't have video cameras, but you know what he's doing.
Yeah, joystick. Well, anyway, there was Darth Vader, and it was a lightsaber battle. Yeah,
you did that in between rounds of the trilogy game. You'd fight Boba Fett between level 2 and 3, and then after level 3, you'd fight Vader himself. Hmm.
Yeah, it's a trilogy game. Is that really 10 years old?
Oh, yeah. More than that.
I guess I was too busy playing California Cruisin'.
Well, I was busy playing...
I can remember playing that at Dave and Buster's
Super Nintendo
in
99.
At home.
Yeah, damn. It's older than that.
It feels like yesterday to me. I'm old, man. It's like World War II was last
Dude,
week.
Dude, whip out your Star Wars DVDs and watch the trailers for the 96 re-releases. You'll see how old they are, even now. I mean, that was 12 years ago.
All right. Well, anyway, we got talking about arcade games, and that got us thinking about the kind of evolution of gaming in general. And that got us thinking about the evolution of role-playing games. That if we start off with the very first edition D&D, I know some people claim their RPGs are actually a little bit older than that, but just for simplicity's sake.
I don't even think D&D is an RPG myself.
Well, we'll let you defend that point here in a minute just to piss people off.
Excellent.
But the point being that if you take first edition D&D, and let's say that for a moment you assume that that's the first role-playing game, and you compare that to the role-playing games of today, all those newfangled things that Luke plays, then there's we were trying
Savage
to...
Battletech, Savage and Dragons, Savage Run.
Savage going out to Burger King.
Savage Rifts. But we were trying, man, that is savage. But we were trying to figure out if there is a sort of, with arcade games, you can see this definite linear evolution where the games become more graphically intense, more physically interactive. You can look at games like, was it Time Crisis or whatever, where you actually have to physically dodge to the side.
Right.
Or some of those newer boxing
time
games where you have to, once again, like, you know, physically you hold gloves and punch and dodge to the side, and the improvement in graphics and all that kind of stuff. And we're trying to figure out, is there a similar sort of evolution to the role-playing game? Because
they don't have blue ink anymore,
because
now it's full color.
You don't have to color in your own dice.
What's funny is I have some of those dice I had to color in. Came with my original fastest Star Trek game. It came with instructions on how to color the menus in a crayon, and then how you had to scratch off the excess wax. No, I'm serious. You got the dice had no...
No, I don't doubt you, but I'm just like, are they too cheap to buy a drill press or what?
No, really. The dice would come and you'd have like a plain red die, and it would have like, let's say, like the numbers milled into it.
Uh-huh.
But the numbers would have no distinct color. And so you'd have to take like a white crayon, color over the number, and then scratch off the excess wax such that what you're left with was a white number 5, for example.
You know, I went to Walmart around the same time we were playing that game, and I bought like a 6-pack of 6-sided dice for like 80 cents.
Well, right, but you ain't going to get 10-sided dice or
no, you got to play West End Star Wars. Except you need 10 more of those six.
Yeah, 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 you have to probably fill a shopping cart full of
and
those.
And then we played Shadowrun too, so
when you need a second shopping cart of those six-sided dice.
If you hang out at a craps table at the end of the night, the casino will just throw out the old ones, and you can play one game of West End Star Wars.
If you're dumpster diving behind Hera's, you might be ready to play West End or Shadowrun.
Hey, I was so poor when we first started playing Shadowrun, my sister actually made me wooden dice for Christmas one year.
Wow.
Wow.
That's way more thought than anyone needs to put into Shadowrun.
Carla, with her glass working, has been working on glass dice, but I'm not sure they're entirely balanced, which makes them more appropriate for Vegas. But
yeah, absolutely.
Perhaps less appropriate.
I brought my own. Yeah. That doesn't work.
Yeah, if you come with a lunchbox full of dice, I don't think they take it.
No.
Even if you have Gretchen with them, I don't think they take it. But we were trying to figure out that while there's this kind of specific evolution of video games, because there's this obvious direction to go of improving graphics, improving sound, improving gameplay, do you have the same sort of thing with a role-playing game? Because since you're starting off with pencil, paper, and imagination, and you're ending with pencil, paper, and imagination, is there really this logical direction of evolution? And whether there is or isn't, has there been a specific direction of evolution for the games over the years?
Well, I think when you look at how games started out, you know, like D&D, the first game, and chainmail, all that. I mean, you're not really necessarily talking about how we think of role-playing games nowadays, where you come up with a background and a personality, and you get out your colored contacts and your cape, and you get reservations at Denny's for your all-night LARP and all that. But, I mean, back then, I think, because this was before I was born, I don't really think it was a role-playing game how we think of it. I think it was they took tabletop wargaming and then they turned it into Mary Sue's and Marty Stew's. I think that they, instead of vast armies or small squads, it was like the leaders of those squads or the heroes.
Right.
And they wanted to drive individually, the party wanted to drive one of those guys and make them really cool and twink them up and power them up. And that's not a bad... I think that's a bad thing.
Because there's no more twinks anymore in role-playing.
Well, yeah. I think that's a bad thing in role-playing from my perspective because it gets in the way of the story and it gets in the way of character and all that. But back then, it was different. I think
I see
it was
it as
coming
it's the start of
it.
A good
yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
That you have these war games.
Right.
And you move from the war games to an interest in individual models.
Now, you know what's going to happen. Somebody's going to email us and say, well, I have this interview with Gary Gygax where he says that he played the first game of chainmail at Denny's wearing a cape.
Well, like I said, I'm just simplifying here to say a D&D first edition was the first role-playing game. And I realize it's been...
I think it was the first ROLL playing game.
Yeah, right.
Ooh,
snap.
But the
dead horse, let's beat it some more.
The point being, though, that as you move from these tabletop war games into a role, into sort of, okay, we now have an interest in a singular model and learning more about him or her, that I think you're headed in the right direction of now asking questions about the character.
Sure.
And had these questions never been asked, the role-playing games that we have today would not exist.
Oh, I think it's totally natural just to sit there and you have fighter. You are playing level 3 fighter, and it's level 4 elf's turn. And you're sitting there, it's like, man, why is my fighter hanging out with this gay elf? I just don't know. Well, let's justify that.
Well, we've talked about this with video games, how with games like XCOM or more recently me playing Mass Effect, that we project characters and personality impulses upon what really is a video game that was not made to necessarily encompass.
Well, come
that
on.
Kind
we
of
all
that.
Have a little story when we play Civilization.
Oh,
cut
yeah.
me a break.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's Civilization or XCOM or Mass Effect or Fallout or KOTOR.
When I'm playing Mass Effect, I'm not playing the same story they're running.
Yeah.
I've got my own going
precisely.
On.
And so
same thing with KOTOR and all
this. It's
just
necessary evolution. But it kind of seems to me that
I know when John plays Echo the Dolphin, he has this whole plot line lined out.
I watch this Nature Channel spot on dolphins. They are freaky. I tell you what, they'll seriously circle you and rape you at the beach.
Yeah, actually, they're the only, if I'm not mistaken, they're the only animal species outside of humans that have sex for pleasure.
Well, chimps do that, too, but it gets freakier than sex for pleasure.
Yeah.
Like, they go in gangbanger packs. It's they look do. It up online. It's yeah, I'm not even do. Making this up.
My original major before
what Nature Channel are you watching?
The Nature Channel.
No, he's completely right. My original major before I switched to English was marine biology. In fact, that was my dream.
You are the originator of dolphinsex.com.
I am.
Wow.
I am.
Echo the Dolphin slash. Vegeta landed holding Draco in his arms. But it turned on Echo.
I spent years of my life very fascinated by sea life, read tons of books, and he's absolutely right. And on a recent cruise, I did one of those hang out with the dolphins excursions.
You got raped by a dolphin.
I did, man.
Could you show the court where the dolphin touched you?
I still have trouble sitting down. That's why I'm standing up for this podcast, because of what that dolphin did to me. But it seems like ever since role-playing games have moved from their war game to their role-playing game, that it kind of seems like since then, nobody's exactly sure where to take them. That basically, you have two directions. That seems like people have taken them. Or if you're trying to avoid the role-playing game, there's two directions of evolution. One is to the hardcore, independent storyteller games.
Right. Well, we were talking about this on the forums. It's the games that Luke hates. If Luke were here right now, he'd be frothing. It's
pass the stick.
Pass the stick. It's just like, it's my turn to talk. It's like, okay, you know, roll two dice. You attack the kobold. Okay, you hit the kobold. Now wait, whoa. I just don't hit the kobold. I tell you what I do to the kobold.
And so you either hit interactive storytelling on one hand, where effectively you're basically trying to disintegrate the structure of role-playing game.
Well, it turns into GM fiat and it turns into player fiat. Well, it's just people telling a story, which is not a bad thing.
I hate GM fiat, but that's the worst part, is that suddenly the randomness comes not from the dice, but from you don't know whose fiat it's going to be next. That it's just anybody's fiat that basically
it's a good thing when all the fiat is going in the same direction. Well, but I've never been in a group that's done that. What happens if you have competing fiat?
Well, do you recall back in the day?
Italian road race?
No, fiats don't go very fast at all. I've been to Italy.
Before the internet was a popular household.
That joke puttered out.
Yeah, it did.
Ooh, we'll have to send it to the mechanic.
Yeah, we're making that one go down on all fours. But that's the tired, really, machine. So.
I'm exhausted.
Well, that's fine. We're just going to motor on past it. So,
but if not, to change gears now, going back to what you said.
All right, right. Let me just drive on past this one.
Too late. It's too similar as the last one. Chad wins.
I'm trying to take a neutral view here.
Could have saved you 10 seconds ago.
But, you know, that's on the one hand, you get this thing where it's this interactive storytelling to the point that all you're really doing is basically saying, how can we change role-playing games by disintegrating the structure of what makes role-playing games? That basically get rid of the GM or change the GM to the point where everybody's the GM, get rid of the dice.
Is that such a bad thing?
I think yes. Well, yes
and no.
Depends
on your intent with the game.
No, in that, everybody's having fun. There's no such thing as bad fun.
Right, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, exactly. And if you believe that, then let me tell you about prison showers. But the point being...
Wow.
You have learned a lot in the last month.
But the point being that I think if you're going after the accoutrements of role-playing games, simply for the sake of going after the accoutrements of role-playing games, it's misguided. Mm-hmm. Now, if you
what do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean is if you generally have a new idea of here's a new way to conduct a role-playing game, great. But if all you're trying to do is be different for the sake of being different, that
rebellion for the sake of rebellion rather than innovation.
Right, that we're going to have a role-playing game and it's not innovative. We're just going to get rid of the game master just to see what happens.
Well, Dan, that's because you're an old man. You're some old grognard, mired by the past, living in your little box.
Exactly. If I understood the indie gamer, then...
Yeah, you're just elitist. You just don't have a breath of gaming.
But if you go after something simply for the sake of going after it, I think you've missed the point.
Right.
Now, on the far opposite extreme, you have groups and companies that basically are not going after the structure of role-playing game. but simply trying to monetize every aspect of a role-playing game. And I think this one speaks for itself.
What companies, Dan? I have nothing coming to mind.
I have no idea which WotC I'm talking about.
Me neither, Games Workshop.
But on the far opposite extreme, you get these companies that are simply trying to monetize every aspect of the role-playing game rather than let it evolve. Now, between those two, I think there is a process of evolution of the role-playing game that I can look at games like the, let's even say like the first edition D&D. Let's forget fourth edition for a minute because there's too much.
Yes, let's forget fourth edition.
Let's talk about like second or third edition D&D.
Let's talk about second edition.
And you can see an evolution of the role-playing game there where you take what in first edition was very set in stone. You give additional control to the player, additional flexibility to the rule system. You try to take the game in different directions without monetizing it or rebelling for the sake of rebellion, and you genuinely get a new game.
Like Proficiencies and Thaco.
And or
it's
you,
good for everyone.
Or you can take a game like, I'll even give Luke credit here with the whole Savage Worlds thing, that you can take a game like Savage Worlds where they try to take things and move them from specific to being a little bit more archetyped and being a little bit more generic and simplified. And suddenly now you can take Savage Worlds and apply it to any number of settings or systems out there. And I see a positive evolution of the role-playing game because I don't pick up Savage Worlds and get the sense that someone's trying to monetize it. In fact, quite the opposite. They're making it so generic, it's non-monetized.
Come on, they released a book for $10.
Yeah.
Luke gave them out for Christmas.
Yeah, Luke was handing them out for free.
I think that was Christmas. I think that was just, here.
Evangelizing?
Yeah.
Proselytizing, yes.
And, you know, on the flip side, nor do I pick up Savage Worlds and see them changing things simply for the sake of changing them. It's like, Chad, back when you and I were in high school and the alternative movement first hit.
Yeah.
And it's like, suddenly we have this group of people who are all going to be different
the
exact same way.
Right. South Park covered very well.
Yeah, that we're all different in the exact same way.
To be fair, flannel is very comfortable.
Hey, I love flannel.
It's nice
and
in the fall.
I have tons of ripped jeans. The thing is I didn't go to the Gap and pay $80 flannel for a pair of pre-ripped jeans.
I wear it to my costume parties when we're going as truckers and hicks and stuff. It looks great.
Nice. Really? Which did you go, trucker or hick?
Well, what's the difference?
You racist.
The difference is I wear my trucker hat when I go as a trucker.
Nice.
Oh, okay.
A visionary.
That's right. And everyone knows.
You have a banjo when he goes the hick.
No. I need to learn the banjo.
My
generation,
do.
There's always been a dude in the family on the Irish side that knows the banjo. And no one has stepped up so far in my generation. And it's going to fall to me. I'm the elder born son.
Just wait till Banjo Hero comes out for
Banjo Hero.
Oh, yes.
I think they came out on 64 with a kazooie.
Banjo Hero.
Oh, I do.
Banjo Hero, the Purdy Mouth expansion.
You reached way back for that one.
Banjo Hero.
I am going to try to pick up
the mandolin. Rural Western Missouri.
I am going to pick up the mandolin soon since I can't find enough.
No, you're not.
Well, here's the thing.
So you might pick up a mandolin.
Well, that's
you might not learn how to play it, but you'll pick it up.
I'm really going to learn it this time, guys.
That's the reason I'm going to pick it up. Because
this is my last cigarette.
Because the problem is that I couldn't find any learning material on the bouzouki, but the mandolin, which is another four-course instrument, is very similar to the bouzouki. So if I
you're
can
serving
learn
us
mandolin,
a four-course meal of BS just, here.
Hey, I know a guy who picked up the mandolin a couple years ago. He found a teacher down in the South City, and
yeah, well, there's
that's where the Italians are. My
okay.
people.
Well, okay, feartheboot.com, the forums. We're going to start a betting pool whether or not Dan will pick this up and drop it, or he'll actually learn it and play it on a podcast one day.
And learn the mandolin.
You could take it to a Ren Fair and be like, this is a lute. And they'd be like, oh my God, it is a lute. I saw that 10 years ago at the Lute Fest.
Lute Fest.
And you'll be vindicated.
Lute Hero.
And I'll be vindicated.
Air Lute.
Which I do not want to be a Vindicator because the light mech that goes 460 is just plain stupid.
That is stupid.
It is very stupid.
I want to be a Locust 2C.
So
8-12.
So back to this whole evolution of role-playing games.
See, role-playing games used to be a fish, a stinky fish. And then it crawled out of the primordial ooze that was Gary Gygax's beard. And then it became modern gaming.
Wow. The way I see it, good evolution of role-playing games, it's kind of like three parallel tracks. One, the mechanics behind the game that runs combat, social interaction,
right,
whatever.
Okay.
Two, is the style and the way that it's done. And a lot of that's, you know, just the depth of the material, how well the setting coalesces as you put out more product. And three right. is the intent of the game that you want to play, whether you want to play a tactical battle, a pass the stick, you know, social contest or whatever. What is the goal of the game? So it's like if you have advancements along all three of these tracks, you get a better game, a more immersive experience from the outset.
You know, I think the evolution of your first two tracks are pretty self-explanatory, but let's talk about number three for a minute. There, I completely agree with you, but I want to expound upon that. That the greatest evolution of a role-playing game, I mean, the evolution of the rules is fairly self-explanatory, et cetera, et cetera. But the evolution of the intention of the role-playing game and the diversity of a role-playing game, that's where I personally think it's at. That what you have is, you know, if you go way back, you had a very small number of role-playing games. They were all very similar in nature. They were all dungeon crawls. And what you got as you moved forward was suddenly you had a variety of experiences that you create with the role-playing game. That if you sit down and play a Vampire the Masquerade LARP, you're getting a radically different experience than
you don't sit down to LARP, Dan. You stand up.
All right, well,
outside Denny's.
Okay. Well, the point is, if you're in cuffs after LARPing, then you've had a radically different experience than, let's say, someone who has, you know, sat down with the intention of playing a tactical role-playing game or a tactical simulator where you take the war game and add some amount of character to it.
Man, and I need to run a LARP at Fear the Con.
I
want to now.
You should, dude. Second slot.
Third slot. I'm running second slot.
Could provide cage.
Don't do it first slot because I won't be awake.
You can't LARP in the morning or the afternoon. Wait till people are
really drunk.
Super Mario LARP, man. You'd have like yellow capes.
Dude, I could pull it off.
I would be like, I'd have this big, you know, felt boot costume.
I could grow a mustache so easily between now and Fear the Con. I grow a mustache before I get home.
You've already started, actually.
I pretty much have.
Yeah, you know, it's actually funny. Looking across the table, you have
not even
growing
2 days. This is, I shaved yesterday during the day.
I'm the same way, man. I just shaved today and it was choking my razor, but that's, I don't have the Italian heritage.
At least it wasn't choking your chicken.
For me.
Choking my razor.
Protecting me from prostate cancer, yes. As we talked about in the last episode. But,
I didn't listen to any of that of the last episode because, you know, I don't listen to podcasts.
Right.
But, on the forums, people are going nuts about this. It's like, the rating was this, and you should change the rating.
It's a health issue.
It was a health issue, man. I'm offering people health advice to prolong their lives, so, protect themselves from cancer.
Amateur health advice.
Let me get this straight.
Legal.
I just want to, just because, again, I don't listen to podcasts. I didn't listen to the last one. Are you telling people to wank?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, preferably to have sex, but if that's not possible, then that's
and
fine.
And this is Fear the Boot, so it's probably not. Hey, guys.
Yeah. But if you can't necessarily have sex, quote unquote, then yeah, it is possible. It is entirely, it's a medical fact that beating your meat can protect you from prostate cancer.
Now, Dan, what about the ladies?
The ladies, their job is to help us guys if they care about us.
Wow.
I don't think there are many ladies who suffer from prostate cancer. I remember my high school biology.
Ladies, if you're out there, once again, we covered this in depth in the last episode.
Ladies, if you're out there at Humphrey's on Wednesday night, right down the street from my apartment, what you've got to do for the demographic health of the nation.
John at FearTheBoot.com.
Find this guy, about 5'10". Black hair, brown eyes, devastatingly handsome. Take him home.
So after they do that, where are you going to be?
Sting. Wow.
Called me out.
Email John at FearTheBoot.com. Tell him that you are interested in helping him not develop any kind of cancer. And that's where he's going to be. So
I'm just going to sit in my email box right now because I know how attractive that is.
Sorry, ladies. Some of us on the show are already married.
Yeah, so. I apologize to tell you that. Yeah. But John's still open. So
sorry, Francis. Dan is unavailable.
Yes, Francis, I apologize to tell you, but no.
Well, if you look at Dan from the back, he's actually a girl. So
anyway, you guys think about the evolution of RPGs, and we're going to think about how holidays destroy our podcast.
I'm going to think about the evolution of Laclede Street Bar and Grill.
I'm going to think about the evolution of can Chad get home legally?
So, which he probably can't. So, thank you guys for tuning in. What we call Chad a Cab. We will catch the rest of you next time.
See ya.
Bye.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2008, fully owned by its hosts. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.